You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 4th of February, 2026. It's a day where the Australian share market rose, but only just. The S&P ASX 200 up 0.8% today to 8,927. We'll have the details with Damien Bowie from Wilson Asset Management in a few moments. But first, we're going to take a closer look at what is actually driving inflation. The RBA's decision to lift interest rates yesterday for the first time in 2 years, it pointed to a material pickup in inflationary pressures in the second half of the year. So who is to blame? Is it the government? Well, here's what Treasurer Jim Chalmers had to say in Question Time earlier today.
There are a range of views about this. AMP, government spending has peaked. The growth in government spending is going to add less to inflation. The Commonwealth Bank, the public sector's contribution to growth has eased significantly. Westpac, public sector demand growth is slowing and indeed was negative over the first half of 2025. Even this morning, Mr. Speaker, Access Economics made the point that public spending is not the driver of the uptick in inflation that we saw towards the end of last year and represented in last week's inflation numbers. Now, Mr. Speaker, if the Shadow Treasurer doesn't want to take the word of those economists, then I refer him again to the comments of the Reserve Bank Governor yesterday in the media release, in the Statement on Monetary Policy, in the press conference itself. And the Governor made the point, and I'm quoting, growth in private demand has strengthened substantially more than expected. Quoting again, private demand is growing more quickly than expected.
Okay, so that's the Treasurer Jim Chalmers there speaking Question Time earlier today. So let's take a closer look at that statement by the Reserve Bank following the decision to lift interest rates yesterday. And in it, it said, while part of the pickup in inflation is assessed to reflect temporary factors, it is evident that private demand is growing more quickly than expected, capacity pressures are greater than previously assessed, and labour market conditions are a little tight. So what does this all mean, and who is to blame for inflation? For that and more, I spoke to Shane Oliver, Chief Economist at AMP. Shane, first of all, in a statement, the RBA attributed a rise in inflation for its reason to lift interest rates, but it gave three factors. So can we go through them and have you explain what they actually mean? So the first one, private demand is growing more quickly than expected. What does that mean?
Well, basically, private demand is spending by Australian households, consumers, spending on new homes, building homes, so home construction, and, of course, business investment. And all of those in the last year or so have picked up pace. Consumers have been spending more. We've seen a slight pickup in home building construction, and so we've certainly seen a pickup in business investment. And that pickup has been stronger than the Reserve Bank expected. So ultimately, when you add it all together, we've seen stronger growth in private demand.
The second thing it said was that capacity pressures are greater than previously assessed. So what are capacity pressures exactly, and how does that flow through to prices?
Well, capacity relates to the intersection of demand and supply in the economy. So what's happened here is that the economy has an ability to supply and service a certain number of products. And of course, demand has picked up, possibly going above the level of the ability of the economy to meet that demand. So you've seen that pickup in private spending at a time when public demand is still very strong. That's led to high levels of overall demand relative to the supply of goods and services in the economy. That's causing capacity constraints in the overall economy. And we often talk about capacity utilization has gone up. We're seeing excessive use in terms of that capacity. And of course, that can contribute to higher inflation because companies are able to push up prices in response to strong demand for their products.
Is this where the productivity discussion comes in?
This is where productivity comes in. So one way to solve the problem is to boost productivity. If we can work more smartly, produce more for the number of hours that we work and for the number of people employed, then we can better supply demand, whether that demand is coming from government, whether it's coming to build new homes, whether it's coming from businesses to invest, or whether it's coming from ordinary household spending. So if you can boost productivity, it means less in the way of capacity constraints. You can produce more in your economy without seeing inflation.
And the third thing the RBA noted was a tight labour market. So that basically means people have a job. So that's good news, right?
Look, it's certainly good news. The labour market is tight. We heard a couple of weeks back that the unemployment rate is 4.1%, which historically in Australia is quite low. So that's good news. The problem is that when the labour market is tight, it can mean upwards pressure on inflation as well, because workers, understandably, demand higher wages when there's lots of demand for their services. And of course, higher wages also mean higher costs for companies, and that means upwards pressure on inflation.
We mentioned three. The other side note the RBA noted was that there are some temporary factors influencing inflation. What are they, and do you agree?
Look, there's certainly been some temporary factors in there. One, of course, is the energy rebates. Several states had big energy rebates a year or so ago. Ahead of elections, those energy rebates came to an end and suddenly electricity prices spiked higher. Another one, of course, is overseas travel, which in the latter part of last year saw quite sharp increases. And that partly reflects a lack of competition on international air routes. And it's also a bit of an issue in Australia as well. So there's an argument there that there's some temporary factors around those sorts of things impacting the inflation numbers.
And so when we look at all those reasons that the RBA gave then, who is to blame for the rise in inflation, and to what extent is the government to blame too, both federal and state?
Well, my view is that it's very hard to blame Australian households here. They're just trying to grow their spending in response to the lower interest rates after having many years of cut back. It also makes sense for businesses to invest. We have a lack of investment in Australia. So I think it's good we're seeing stronger business investment. And we also need to see more home building construction because we have a shortage of housing. So it's very hard to blame home builders, Australian consumers and businesses for investing. I think the real problem is, in particular, that we've got very high levels of government spending in Australia. Government spending has slowed down a little bit over the course of the last year, but it's still at very, very high levels. It's taking up 28% of overall demand. And of course, when that's the case, if private demand picks up, it has to compete with the public sector for resources and puts pressure on prices. So I think if one sector is to blame, it's really the government sector in Australia. Government spending is simply too high.
Okay. Following the RBA statement, you've now had almost 24 hours to take a closer look at it. Do you think that they are pointing to the potential for a follow-up rate rise?
Look, I think when you read the RBA statement, the more concerned you get about it. The RBA is now seeing inflation staying above target for a lot longer, and that's despite factoring in assumptions for almost two more rate hikes. So I think there is now a very high risk that we'll see further rate hikes. My base case is, and I'm hopeful we'll avoid that, and I think some of those temporary factors may take some of the pressure off inflation as we go through the next few months, but the risk is very high. I think we've really got to wait for the March quarter inflation numbers when they come out at the end of April, and the next big meeting to watch from the RBA will be the one in May. And I'd have to say it again could turn out to be 50-50 as to whether they hike again, but the risks are certainly on the upside.
And finally, what's the significance of the RBA lifting rates when the rest of the world are either cutting rates or at least keeping them on hold?
Well, I guess there's two ways of looking at it. The one way is to say, well, Australia has more of an inflation problem than other countries do. We have bigger issues in terms of getting our productivity back up and maybe slowing down government spending than is the case in other countries. I guess another way to look at it is maybe the RBA has acted a bit too early here, maybe if they wait a little bit longer, then inflation will come back down. And we've seen a little bit of that in other countries around the world, in the UK, in Canada, to some degree in the US, although they've been affected by tariffs. They all saw a spike in inflation last year, and then it came back down again. So maybe our Reserve Bank perhaps could be a bit more cautious. But that said, I can understand why the Reserve Bank has moved, because the inflation problem does seem to be a little bit higher in Australia than it is in other countries. I guess there's a third interpretation, and maybe that is the RBA is showing the way, that we're just one of the first to move here. And of course, other countries might see a pickup in inflation down the track. And there is some inkling there in market expectations that rates have bottomed in places like Europe, like Canada, and the next move in those countries could be up, but probably 6 to 12 months away, I think.
Shane Oliver there from AMP, the Chief Economist. Let's go to the Australian share market now, which actually had a great day despite a weak start. The S&P ASX 200 up 0.8% to 8,927. More sectors actually ended lower than higher. Information technology absolutely smashed today, down by 9.4%. Materials and energy sectors doing well, but you can see that reflected in the top stocks today on the 200. Yancoal doing best, up by 8.9%. Silex Systems up by 6.6%. South 32, 6% stronger today. BHP also having a great day. Shares up by more than 4% today, really helping drive the index higher. But it's those worst performers reflecting the poor performance in the US, sell-off in US software shares overnight following concerns AI could hit demand for companies' products. So we saw stocks here like Xero leading the charge down. Shares off by 15.9% today. Hub 24 off by 10.7%. WiseTech Global losing 10.7%. And Technology One off by 10%. News Corp also having a poor day, shares off by 9.6%. To tell us more about the day's market action and to tell us through investor sentiment, I spoke with Damien Bowie. He's a portfolio strategist at Wilson Asset Management. Damien, to start off, can you run through what you think investor sentiment is like at the moment?
I think investor sentiment's actually pretty constructive, but for different parts of the world. So what you're seeing at the moment is a bit of concern still about the AI space in America. People are still concerned about valuations. They're concerned about monetary policy uncertainty with a new Fed chair coming in. And in Australia, I guess what people are confronted with is that, you know, you've got commodities on the one hand that are doing very well, but then you've got a lot of the domestic and the tech exposures that are not doing very well. So there's a lot of dispersion between the two or three camps there. And what's really happening is that a lot of money that has entered into Australia over the last few years because Australia was perceived as safe against China risk or US risk is now going the other way. And so this is actually causing people to think about country allocation and obviously specific sectors that they want to avoid. But on the other hand, like you can see Asian markets like Korea, and they're flying at the moment. So I'd say investor sentiment is actually pretty constructive. People still want to find places to deploy their money. They're not just going to cash, but there is obviously a bit of dispersion between the haves and the have-nots at the moment.
Okay, a few things to break down. I found it interesting you were talking about money flowing out of Australia. That higher Australian dollar now, though, given we're seeing higher interest rates, is that going to perhaps bring some investors back in? And given a second part of that question, given Aussie rates are now rising at a time when other global central banks are cutting or at least holding, to what extent is that changing the investment environment?
I think that's a really good point to raise. So there's a price for everything. And we saw ahead of the RBA raising rates, bond yields were going up quite a lot in an unusually sharp fashion. And it wasn't just because people were getting ahead of the RBA and pricing in lots and lots of hikes. It wasn't just because of that. It had to do with the fact that money was leaving the country. And so now what you've got is, well, there's a price for everything, right? Like there's nothing wrong with the Aussie economy. It's actually going pretty well at the moment. But obviously people need a little bit of a cheaper entry point, a little bit of a higher yield, if you will, to attract that money back when there are so many alternatives out there in the world. So I do think that the strength of the Aussie dollar is starting to say, well, hang on a minute, this isn't a one-way trade of capital flying out of the country. Actually, there are moving parts here, whether it's the valuations on our stocks going down for certain parts or whether it's bond yields going up, that are actually starting to make Australia attractive again from an offshore investor perspective. So I think that those moving parts are there. And for what it's worth, I think that the bond yield is actually reaching such high levels in Australia now that we will get actually a lot of foreign interest, whether or not they're risk on or risk off in terms of predisposition, the valuations are actually starting to become quite compelling, too compelling to ignore.
You also mentioned the tech sector, right? Overnight, there appeared to be a fresh wave of concerns about the impact AI will have on the sector. Software shares smashed. We're seeing some of that flow through to the market here. What's your take on the space?
So tech in Australia is really interesting because we don't quite have the same depth of technology as, say, the Americans do. We have a tech sector, but it's nowhere near as rich and deep or diverse or sophisticated necessarily as what you see in the US. But nonetheless, money obviously needs to find a tech sector weight in Australia. And for a long time, while sort of capital is not moving out of the country, well, you could see why there's a scarcity of tech type assets in Australia, and they get bid up to relatively stretched valuations. So that story made a lot of sense. Now, what you're seeing is money moving out of Australia. The ring fencing, as it were, is no longer there, and so disproportionately, you're seeing outflows impact this sector. On top of that, what you've seen is that obviously the RBA has been a bit different to the rest of other central banks because they're now raising rates and bond yields have gone up ahead of that. And the rise in the cost of capital has really hurt long duration growth exposures like tech in Australia. So both the capital outflow and the trajectory of the RBA rate cycle have really hurt tech. Having said all of that, it's a global phenomenon. Clearly, investors are questioning the longer term earnings growth outlook for a lot of AI and software type stocks. What is the saving grace? The saving grace here is that, well, actually, a lot of the growth complex has become very, very oversold. It could stay oversold for a little bit longer. But if you are a longer term investor, what you have to look for are, well, some of the positives are bond yields in America are staying remarkably well contained. Interest rate volatility in America is remarkably low. These things actually set up a situation where, on, say, a 6-month horizon, you could actually see a bounce in some of these really oversold stocks as people start to recognize that what the Fed is doing is effectively a form of quantitative easing, which historically has benefited these stocks. So I wouldn't say, this is an exposure that you have to have, but it is interesting that the sector is very, very oversold. And it is actually due for a bounce, respecting what people are thinking about earnings and all of that, of course. But there is a price for everything. And there are some things that are actually going right for the sector.
All right, speaking of a price for everything, prices for precious metals. They came under a bit of a correction earlier this week. Were they too hot?
They absolutely were too hot. And the reason why I can say that is not because I think I'm better at modeling this stuff than anyone else. It's not about that. It's about the fact that usually when you see an asset price, the price goes up, the volatility goes down. The volatility gauge represents the risk, the price is the price. So less risk, higher price. That's usually the way it should work. What you started to see with the precious metal complex was that the price was going up and the volatility was going up, which meant that it was extremely speculative, extremely overbought. So we should have expected to see some consolidation. Now, when you see things like silver trade at a volatility of nearly 100%, right, which is crazy volatility to be expecting on an annualized basis, but that's kind of where it was. It doesn't take a lot of risk. It doesn't take a lot of worry to spread through the market, rational or not, to make people jump ship. And it just so happened that we had a bit of a catalyst, which was a change in Fed chair. There's a lot of speculation as to what the true colors of Kevin Warsh actually might be like. But at the end of the day, you had a commodity complex which was very, very overbought, not priced for much risk at all, very speculative. And then you have a potential catalyst for an unwind, and it did happen.
That is Damien Bowie there from Wilson Asset Management, and he wraps up the podcast for this, what day is it today? Wednesday. Join me again tomorrow.
This SBS On the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.